for fun.
Thank you. I love it. Thank you. I saw this coming in, small yet significant acts of kindness. I love the way you mentioned it, and I think we failed because the first one says park a little farther from the church so someone else can park. So we need to work on that for next time. We parked right up front. It's a real pleasure and a joy to be here. It always feels like I'm in the middle of family, and you know, I think I'm a little jealous of you guys. That's probably not a very spiritual thing for me to feel, but you know, you guys get Bonnie every week, so you guys are a lucky bunch. Thank you for having us. I think my claim to fame is becoming that I bring other guests with me, so I'm sort of the chauffeur, and I have an incredible guest this time as well, whom I'll introduce. But as Hugh was reading this morning, which was very moving, thank you, and that was a very powerful poem. Oh, yeah, it's all perfectly imperfect. Yay! This idea of giving and dancing with the process. I'm so familiar with this church that I can just change mics if you'd like.
That's nice. All right, that'll work. Are you good with that? Okay. I might change a few other things here, too. Yeah. You better watch out. This is dangerous to call me family, right? Going back to the beautiful poem and giving and receiving, I was just reminded, I haven't thought of this in a long time, but I was this very sacred moment, I would say, of philanthropy, of generosity that I experienced when I was in college. I was, you know, it was like one of these mornings where I haven't slept too much and, you know, I'm like cramming, I've got a midterm, I'm on the way. And on the way, I somehow see this man hobbling to catch the bus. And I realize that the bus is kind of zooming past him, and this guy's like, you know, he has his cane, and he's like really trying, and I just see that he's going to miss this bus. And it's all happening. I'm sort of far away from it, and I don't know what got in me, but I was like, I just had this overwhelming feeling that I wish I could give him my legs. And of course, that's very irrational. It doesn't make any sense, you know, especially for a computer science guy at UC Berkeley, you know, like, give your legs, come on, straighten out, man, you got a midterm in 5 minutes, you know. But I dropped everything and I sat down on the streets, and I just, I don't know, maybe you'd call it prayer. I don't even know what to call it. But I just wished him well, love. And the bus goes past him, he misses the bus. And I had my eyes closed, and I could see that he was going to miss his bus. But right after that, as I opened my eyes, I noticed that the bus driver stops a little farther up, gets out, and tells this guy, come on out. And it was such a, like, nothing was exchanged, in a way. And he doesn't know me. I was so far back, you know. But it was such a sacred moment of connection. I felt connected. And even if the bus driver hadn't stopped and called him in, I still felt a moment of connection, this deep reciprocity that kind of, I think, we're all bound by. And so today, our wonderful guest is somebody who lives into that philanthropy with all kinds of different capitals. So I want to tell you one story about him before I hand it over to him, because this is sort of, it's my favorite story of his. I hope you weren't going to speak about this, because then it's like, you know, punchline's out. Like, I already told you the Ari story. So he went to a meditation retreat. I think it was one of his first ones. And this is like 10 days, no reading, writing, talking. It's like really hard. And so he wanted to leave in the middle. He's like, this is not for people like me. This is for, you know, all like the blessed prayer folks, you know, not me. And so he's like ready to leave. And as he's like, he's debating, like, it's probably not a good idea. I should stick it out. I don't know how it's going to look back home if I tell him I kind of quit, and all these thoughts that he must be going through. And he sees this youngish kid, and he's got a T-shirt, and the T-shirt says happy on it. And he says, oh, I can be happy right now. Like, what am I trying? chase. Where am I going and where am I running away from and where am I running towards? And so he just kind of landed in himself and he's like, oh, I can be happy. And so, okay, that's good. And he says, all right, I think I'll go back. So he goes back and he stays. The next day he wants to run away again. And he again sees that happy t-shirt and he's like, you know, and then I think it happens a third time and this time he's looking for the happy t-shirt, you know. And at the end, when you're allowed to speak, he goes and finds this fellow and he says, you know, I just want to come and say thank you because your t-shirt really kept me in. And this has been so meaningful for me. So thank you. And they start talking like, hey, what do you do? What do you do? You know, and Ari's like, Ari's a businessman. He's a big philanthropist. He does a lot of things in the world. But they didn't talk about that. He was asking him, what do you do? And this guy was like, well, you know, I just go around serving people. I do small things. And he says, well, aren't you worried about tomorrow? Shouldn't you be more responsible and get a job and accumulate? And he's like, no, you know, I'm not too worried about things because I don't have too many attachments. You know, I just like to live in the flow of love. Ari's like, oh, well, that's interesting. And he says, you don't really have too many attachments? And he's like, no, not really. But he says, well, but I do kind of like my shirt, you know. It's a nice shirt. So they had this beautiful conversation. I don't know if he knew. I don't think Ari shared much about him, but they went on. And the next day was the last day. He's about to drive out of this meditation center, and he wants to make a contribution, a donation. So he's about to go to the donation table. And lo and behold, he meets Mr. Happy Shirt again, right? And this guy comes up, and he says, you know, last night I was thinking about it. I don't have too many attachments, but I do have this one attachment, which is my t-shirt. But I was thinking, why should I be even attached to that? Because if you really love something, you should give it away. And so he said, you know, this is for you. He packed it, and he said, he mentioned, please laundry before using, you know. He had worn it a lot. And so here is Ari going to the donation table, and he's got this shirt with him. And he writes a check to the meditation center, which is, you know, which is what he intended to do. But then he's looking at the shirt, which is on the table. And he's like, I received it. This was the most valuable thing, in all likelihood, that this kid cared for. And he gave me the most valuable thing. He gave me all that he cared for. And he gave it in the spirit of inner transformation. He says, it's one thing to like get that, but who do I have to be to truly, genuinely receive that? And so he, like, is reflecting on it, and especially after 10 days of meditation, you gotta get some deep thoughts, right? So he writes another check. He goes to this guy and he gives it to him. He doesn't know who Ari is or what he does in his financial life. And when Ari told this story, he says, that was 18 months ago. And that was a blank check. He could have put any amount on it. I would have let it fly. He gave me all that he had. I wanted to give him all that he has. I don't know his address. I barely know his name. I have no way to contact him. I'm still in shared relationship with him. And there's different kinds of giving. We talk about giving, and then like one of the ways in which we frame giving is there's beggarly giving, like close-fisted way of giving. You kind of begrudgingly, okay, I should give, I want to give, there's this morals, I'm going to get some karma points, whatever, you know. Then there's the neighborly kind of giving, where you give and you know that you're going to be bound with these other people, and then when you're in need, they'll take care of you, you know. And then there's a kind of subtle reciprocity that's kind of baked in, and you want the security of that reciprocity. But then there is kingly giving. Kingly giving is like you walk in to the king's court and you're not treated like royalty because you are royalty. You're treated like royalty because the king is just giving regardless of who you are. Sort of like the rose gives its essence, right? Effortlessly, unconditionally, not judging and saying, I like you, you look better, you have a better bank account, you're more spiritual. No. It just gives effortlessly because it is in its own nature. And so Ari is somebody, I would say, who aspires to be kingly giving. Is very high bar, so I'm not going to lavish, I'm not just going to lather that onto anybody. But Ari is somebody like me, who I think, and like a lot of us, who aspire to be kingly givers, who through our very presence say, I want to give to you not because of what you need, not because of what my perceptions tell me, not because of my judgments of that situation, but I want to give because it is in my nature to give. It is in my nature to be connected. So it's a real joy and an honor to know Ari and to invite him up on stage and to include him as a part of our family here in Ventura. Please help me welcome Ari Nassel.
Thank you, brother. Oh, you already got it. Oh, no, yeah, I got this. There's a nonprofit I'm part of called the Pollination Project. And we give out small grants for, like, most of them are $1,000 to people around the world. And what one of the things that we get back from people, we've given grants out of over 100 countries. And over again, people say that the money was great. We're so grateful for that and what we did with it. But the acknowledgement, that was really what ignited what we were doing and reaffirmed who I was and that what I was that was worthy to show up as a volunteer and to do to be of service to my community. And I just feel so much energy in here of acknowledgement, like how everyone just sees each other so fully. And I feel so fully seen. So when I came up here, I just wanted to look in each of you and just to see you the way I, and to acknowledge you the way I feel so seen and so grateful. For that welcoming, Bonnie, and innovation you've created here as a in totality. I guess what I'll talk today is my what I would call is my story of compassion. And compassion for me is as Thich Nhat Hanh, the famous meditation master, says, is a verb. You know, I think we tend to think of compassion as a felt sense. For me, compassion is an expression of the heart, not just the openness of the heart to suffering. And my story actually starts, you know, very close to here. I was growing up in Michigan. And so what takes back, I feel very, very attached to this area, this area of this part of the world because of this. When I was 13, I grew up in Michigan, and I came to Southern California with my family to visit my cousins. And we went to Venice Beach. That's a great place to visit, to get a feel for Californians and your Michigas, as we call in Yiddish. And you know, so I'm sure most people have been here to Venice Beach, and you've got all those things, all the things going on, people juggling and people roller skating and people doing walking on hot coals, hawking things and much more, punching, you know, lifting weights. But what captivated me was this guy. This is 1986, so I'm 13 years old. Is this one guy had this information about how animals were confined, mutilated, and slaughtered for food. This is 1986, and this would be pre Facebook, internet, where it's just really easy to be ignorant of what happens in our industrial food system. And I read it really intently. And at some point, my parents are like, you know, hey, you know, I'm 12 at the time, and they say, hey, all right, time to go. And I say, thank you, and I just keep on walking. 10 years later, I've moved to Southern California. I always felt really at home here, and I'm after being there for a month or so, I'm walking down the same spot, that same area, and I see the same guy. I see him like from maybe here to where the end of the room is. I don't even know what his board says this time, but I recognize him, and everything I see 10 years earlier just clicks, I get it. I'm very slow at learning. My gestation period is obviously longer than most. But I get it, and I get it in a way that is so broad-based. It wasn't just a getting that, like, oh, this is a system I didn't want to participate in. And that was part of it, that I just didn't want to, like, I didn't want to contribute to the suffering that I saw 10 years earlier. But I get it in a way that I see that my choices matter. Everything I do has ripples, for ill or for good. And it also led me to a period of questioning. It's like, oh my gosh, I was doing this 3 times a day. It was this thing that was so obvious to me that I couldn't see. It was the water I swam in. And so I started asking myself, what other unexamined assumptions am I not questioning, not peering behind the veil? And so I led to my spiritual journey. And that led, actually, what ended up coming to is being, I guess, my second epiphany, which is interesting. What happened is I used to write, like, in a journal when I was, like, my late teens, early 20s. And I wrote to myself called, I would say, Dear Middle-Aged Ari. Because what I anticipated was I was going to have a mid-age crisis. So I thought what I would do is I would write about all these great things I did when I was young. You know, I'd write about, like, the places I visited, you know, the jumping out of airplanes and sexual conquests and, you know, successes in every part of life. And that, when I would go back and read my diary and my journal, I would look back and say, oh, I've lived a meaningful life. Why am I so depressed? But the second insight I had after, followed this one a few years later, if I started, like, having more of a spiritual inquiry, you know, was about, like, seeing this future where I got everything I wanted, but I didn't want what I got. And so then it was like, so what is it that I should really want? What is it that's actually, what actually is going to make me look back when I'm 50 and feel like this, that I exchanged those days and those hours for something that was meaningful, for something that I would not have regrets around. And so I held that, and I was just really receptive. Like, I didn't know the answer. It wasn't clear to me what that was, but it was clear to me the path I was going down of accumulation of experiences was not going to be the panacea for my, you know, my internal salvation, my joy. And that led to sort of this receptivity, led to one day I was, you know, I obviously had this predilection, and as Bonnie sort of shared, as towards connecting to those most at our mercy. And, you know, farm animals is really, as I parts that beginning stories told, really is it has been an inroad for me to open my heart. And so I was on this listserv because I had become an animal rights advocate. And, you know, I don't know if you remember listservs where people just sent out emails as, you know, communicate now. And someone created this little commercial. It was called Behind Closed Doors. And they wanted to raise money for this commercial to be put on air about, you know, how animals are treated in the industrial food system. And I saw it, and I was like, oh my God, this needs to get out there. And I said, I'll match everything you, and I, this is early in my business career, and things are going well for me. And I said, I'll match everything you raise the next month. And the woman who runs this organization, you know, works really hard, and she raises a good amount of money, and I write my first check as a, if you quote unquote, philanthropist. And I started doing the calculations around what if 1% of people change their diet and they eat this many animals, how many animals will be reduced from this cruel system. And I get really excited about it. And I start, oh, now I have a purpose for my money. Like, and I start, like, connecting, like, oh, if I make more money, I can make more money, I can feel approved to do that, and now I can give more away, I can earn to give. And that was, that really allowed me to take my livelihood and turn it into something that was in service. But even after doing that for a while, I would spend 99% of my time, you know, say, like, in the process of this system of accumulation, again, in a different kind of accumulation, even though it was for a good purpose, but not really connecting to my heart, not connecting to the part of me that wanted to feel in to the pain of others and to do something about it, not just too quickly jumping into fixing without feeling the sense of oneness. I wanted to become more intimate with the suffering. And I had an opportunity a few years back I went to Mexico and visited these slaughterhouses and industrial agricultural systems. And it was really interesting to me because I really, this opens my heart. We all have our different ways, things we open our hearts to. That's just, it's more accessible. For some person, it's, you know, maybe it's a, you know, it's a companion animal. So someone who's, it's a sick mother. You know, it's someone, another person, it's to seeing the loss of our ecology. You know, so many inroads. And as I went down there, and one of the places I was noticing, I was going to these different facilities, and I'd see all the animals, like in just huge numbers and deep deprivation. And I wasn't, like, my heart wasn't opening. It was, I felt really stoic. And I was trying to check in, like, what's, you know, what's going on here? It's like sometimes I'm doing a documentary and bearing witness, but like, it wasn't accessible to me. My longing to feel connected to their pain, and my heart wasn't opening. And so, I said at this after doing this, I went to this one slaughterhouse where there's these pigs were waiting. It was a small slaughterhouse facility, and they hadn't started their processing yet. And I had an apple, and so I had to be very clandestine, but I started feeding the pig an apple and getting to know it, because I said, I really want to get to know one of these animals more intimately. And he ate it, and I had to be very, very cool, nonchalant about it, because they didn't want them to know that I cared for the animals, the people, it was done under the auspices, we were doing this for a university, on how to make slaughter more efficient. And I just felt like I was just connecting to this as an individual. And then when the processing and the slaughter happened, my heart broke. I just felt so much of this, like, I just felt into, like, my care and longing for this being, as someone who can feel like I can feel. And I realized this remarkable truth I've heard is that one death is a statistic, a thousand or a hundred or a million. I'm sorry, one death is a tragedy, and a thousand or a hundred or a million is a statistic. Because there is something about us that we can't, on broad scale suffering, we just, it's hard to be intimate. It's hard to be available. We can't, it's too big. Our, you know, maybe at some point where I'm able to open my heart wide enough where I can take it all in. But for now, and I think for most of us, it needs to be with you, or you, or you. It has to be like a knowing of the individual capacity for pain, and seeing in my ability to see in them me, and to see me in them, and in the masses, it just hasn't been accessible to me. So a big part of my life is my children, you know, and I'm always curious about, you know, how do I grow that, nurture that seed within them of compassion, and my hypothesis has been that. It's not in sort of telling, it's not teaching, or maybe it's a little storytelling, but it's trying to live as an example. That's maybe the most reliable. Plus, I've got so many things going on in my life. My tendency is less about nurturing in the way that my wife's approach to parenting is. So my son turned 12 earlier this year, and we were driving to go to a putt-putt with friends to celebrate. And he saw a homeless person on the drive there, and he said, "Mom, stop! The person need, you know, can we give some money to that person?" And she's like, "I don't have any money. We have like five people in the car. Like cars are piling up behind me. I'm sorry, I can't." And he was really, really dissatisfied with the answer, and he was like going unhappily to his birthday party. And she says to him, "Okay, Jonah, this is how we do. Tomorrow's your actual birthday." You know, this was the day before his birthday. And she says, "Why don't we go tomorrow and do something, you know, to help, maybe we'll find that man, or we'll find other people who are like him and try to, you know, do something of benefit." And he says, "Okay." And so the next day what we did is I took him and his brother, my other son, and we went to a few places to buy socks and underwear, which are commonly really needed by people who don't have homes. They don't have the capacity to wash their clothes. And we bought a lot of stuff to give from the giving. In fact, he uses some of the money he got from his birthday to buy these as well. And so we went to this place and we handed them out. And at the end, I asked him. I said, "So, what did you notice?" And he said, what I noticed is that we'd give, everything we bought were like 3 packs and 6 packs and 9 packs, but when we gave it to them, they always opened it, and they went to go, their first remarks are, "Oh, I know someone who I can share this with. I know someone who else who needs socks or needs underwear." Like, and it was so eye-opening to him and to me. It's like, oh, wow, the people that I'm serving, or, you know, the people that I'm trying to help, like, they're paying it forward immediately. And in fact, they're giving me a deeper lesson than I live into, about like what it means to feel abundance. And so, I guess I'm trying to figure out the through line or pull this all together. Is this inquiry about how can I, and maybe we, if you feel this is a calling for you, how can we be more intimate with the pain around us? How can we not turn our heads? And not only can we how we turn our heads, but how can we serve that pain so that we are transformed in that service and that people feel whole? There's a quote that I really like, and I'm going to probably mess it up, but it goes something like this. When we fix, we see life as broken. When we help, we see life as weak. When we serve, we see life as whole. I think my son in that experience, and I myself, and through all these also, when I gained to know that pig, I saw the pig as whole. And my son saw this man as whole. And so I just, you know, maybe as a way to reflect for all of us and for me as well, is how do we open our eyes more deeply to the pain that exists in the world, not turn away, but not look at it as that pain as defining of that being who is feeling that pain. How do we see that see in ourselves their pain as our pain? And in seeing them as me and me as them, then we realize our interbeing. And in feeling our interbeing, then maybe can we feel into the oneness that exists all around us. Thank you so much for letting me share.
All right. Just so you know, Nipun and Ari are staying afterwards at 11:30. We'll convene back here, and they'll do some Q&A. We're running a little late, and so we're going to go ahead with a prayer and like that. So let's turn within, and we'll pray. And so we turn within and close our eyes and breathe deeply, if that feels right to you. And we absolutely know that the words that have been spoken here today by both Nipun and Ari are just so wise and so wonderful. We trust that the spirit of the living oneness, the interconnection, the life and the love and the divine has shown us the way, brought us here together by divine appointment to live and to learn and to love and to grow into that ever-deepening space of spirit, that spaciousness. And so today I call forth the spaciousness of heart that can hold everything, that can hold joy and sorrow, that can hold darkness and light, that can hold without holding on, but allows everything to flow through and transform and be transformed. Whatever that means to us today as a community, as individuals, and as a collective blessing the entire world, I trust and I know that divine work has been done here this morning together, and that we all leave a little deeper, a little sweeter, a little more willing, a little more trusting, a little more hopeful, kinder, loving, abundant, able to give and receive with such grace and such freedom. And this is good. And so in the spirit of that, I simply give thanks for this morning. I give thanks for our sacred time together. I give thanks for the transformation that I know has occurred here, for it is through our inner transformation that the whole world changes. I bless this spiritual center as I bless all paths to God. Churches, synagogues, temples, mosques, ashrams, fundamentalists, atheists, agnostics, whoever you can name, I bless them and know that in their own unique and wonderful way, they are a blessing. Even when I can't see it, they are a blessing. And so let us breathe into that blessedness and know that it is good. And in the spirit of this goodness, I release these divine words into the mystery of love. And together we say, and so it is. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that I have. I am so blessed. I am so blessed, I am so grateful. trust